passed out lined one wall, while extra equipment sat closer to the edge of the deck. There were a lot of people here, some of whom wore old-fashioned lab coats of various colors. I was impressed by these people the most. They eyed me seriously, but without the same mistrust as the simpler folk downstairs. "What's this place?"
"The Verge,"
she said in a tone that indicated I was some kind of an idiot for asking.
"Ah," I said, looking over the edge of the railing. "The Verge is the upper deck. What's its purpose?"
"This place keeps us all alive," she said with a hint of pride in her voice. "All that we know, all that we learn, comes from here. Our tools are fashioned here as well, with the raw materials smelted below."
Nanites, I thought to myself. This place was the source. They had retained some of the equipment, and obviously had been very busy creating effective weaponry against the slavers. At last, we came to a lab unlike the others. It was full of vats of colored, bubbling liquids. Most of the liquids were yellow or red, or a tainted mixture of both. I hesitated at the entrance. I'm not sure why. I think it was the smell of the place. It was a distinctly organic odor. Not rot or awful, more like a tannery or a slaughterhouse.
"This must be the Stranger," said a voice.
"Hello, Stranger.
I'm the Investigator."
I stepped into the chamber and turned toward the voice. Taking in the man and the scene around him, I have to admit I recoiled in horror. Standing not 10 feet from me was a big man with a scalpel the size of a butcher's blade in his hand. He had long salt-and-pepper gray hair that hung down past his armpits in an unruly mass. That wasn't what freaked me out, however. What I had trouble accepting, what my eyes latched onto and couldn't escape, was the body on a cold marble slab in front of this blade-wielding investigator. I would recognize that dead man anywhere. I'd seen him in my dreams 1,000 times. His hair was sandy blonde. His eyes, carved, lidless, were as blue as the Georgia sky. It was my own dead body on that slab, and it had been carved up into bloody pieces. I stared at it, frozen in place.
"Can it truly disturb you?"
asked the investigator, his sonorous voice both gentle and commanding at the same time.
"I hadn't thought that it would."
I opened my mouth, then closed it again. I took a breath, but almost choked on the cloying scents that intruded into my lungs. Was I smelling my own death?
"Yes," I said, looking away from the thing on the slab. "It disturbs me. It would disturb any thinking man."
"Tell me, Starman,"
he said, setting the big blade down and walking a step closer to me. Della, who stood at my other side, watched the investigator approach with a mixture of respect and worry. I got the feeling she was comfortable in his presence, but not completely.
"Tell me, what year is it back home?"
he said. I met his dark eyes and knew I was taking a test. I'd never been good at tests. Ask anyone who's ever had the displeasure of administering one in my presence.
I said, "it's 2122, sir."
"A correct answer, but you hesitated,"
said the investigator, turning away from me and walking toward a computer that was set upon a shelf on the far wall of the laboratory.
"Is that because of time dilation? What year did you set out to come here? Really, you must have moved very quickly. You can't have gotten our signal before you left. Do you realize that you're more than 20 years earlier than we expected?"
I blinked at him, chewing over what he was saying. The presence of my own torn-up corpse, not 10 feet from my left hand, was distracting, to say the least. To help myself think, I shifted on my feet so that the body wasn't in my field of vision, at least not most of it. I could still see those cold, bluish-white feet out of the corner of my eye.
"Sir," I said, "I'm not quite sure I'm following you. I know you sent your message indicating you'd arrived here on Zeta Hercules about 30 years back. You're correct if you're saying that we only just got your message on Earth not 6 months ago. The investigator made a strange sound.
It's not possible, what you're saying. Not possible.
What's that, sir? I asked, truly curious.
You're saying that you came from Earth, but you only got our signal a few months ago. The speed of travel that suggests. It defies logic.
Ah, I said, I get it now. What was it that Natasha and the other techs had explained to me at one point? Have you heard of the Alcubierre Drive, sir? I asked him. His dark eyes fixed upon me. He nodded slowly.
A fable. We tried to make it work. We had theories, mathematical models. But to build such a thing, are you saying that Earth has managed it? That you've uncovered the secret of warp drive?
Yes, in a way.
In a way,
he echoed, and his face took on a haunted look.
I've dissected your corpse, sir, he said. Surely you must know that I know you better than you know yourself. The foodstuffs and the microflora species in your gut. Also the protein levels, trace radioisotopes, and even the lead content of your bones. They all match up. You did come from Earth.
That's right, I said. I'm from the old state of Georgia, actually, North America sector.
You said, in a way,
the investigator said suddenly, walking toward me and halting at arm's reach.
What did you mean by that?
Normally I'm a straight-talking fellow, but I found myself wanting to hide things from this man. He was clearly highly intelligent and dedicated to science, but he also seemed mildly insane. At the very least, his brain and mine didn't work on the same frequency. But despite my hesitation, I decided to tell him the truth. I'd already blown his mind partway. I figured I might as well blast it apart completely. We, meaning the people of Earth, didn't exactly figure out how to make the warp drive work, sir. We had help. Well, more than that. The truth is, we bought passage on an alien ship to get out here. We didn't build the ship. We've never managed to build a warp drive either.
But, he said, trying to take it all in, if you've been in contact with aliens with superior technology, what year?
What, sir?
What year did you make contact?
2052, sir. They came to Earth in 2052, and they had so many ships, we could scarcely make out the stars between them. The light of madness in the man's eyes flared brighter.
That makes it all useless, he said. Everything we've done here, a waste of time. We're jokes, forgotten, and laughed at. My life's work, my mother's work before me.
Well, now hold on, I said. It's not quite like...
Why didn't you come sooner?
He asked suddenly.
Why did you leave us here, to rot on this rock beneath an alien sun? Why did you allow the cephalopods to torment us for half a century? Can there be an excuse for such cruelty?
I opened my mouth and raised my hands to answer him, but he was already answering himself. He was up and pacing now, not even looking at me.
The answer can only be political,
he said, his haunted face searching empty years and trillions of empty kilometers, as if they stretched out before him as far as his mind could see.
We were exiles, my mother always told me. Whoever hated us so much must have stayed in power. The social synthesis, the nation blocks... You said something about North America sector, not the United States.
You have part of the answer, I said, getting a word in edgewise at least. He loomed close to me.
That isn't it, Starman, he asked. Your masters hated us, feared us, and wanted us to stay forgotten. What other answer is there, really? I don't even know why I'm asking you. The answers are in the facts as they've been laid out before me. I hadn't wanted to believe...
Sir, I said suddenly, loudly. He looked at me with white-rimmed eyes.
Sir, you don't understand it all yet. Yes, the situation is a political one, but your old enemies are gone, long gone. It's the politics of the galactics that matter now. In fact, that's all that has ever really mattered throughout human history. We just didn't know it. I proceeded to explain to him what every kid on Earth learns in elementary school now, about the layers of government all the way up from local to district to sector to hegemony, and finally to the distant, uncaring halls of the galactics themselves. I explained the deal we'd made to stay alive and the reality of living under the watchful eye of aliens who cared not one whit if we all lived or died. As long as the rules laid down millennia ago in the core systems were strictly followed. The investigator listened closely, and I think he got it. He really did. I might have explained this to anyone else on the planet, and it would have failed to penetrate. But this man was ready to listen. He dug inside my corpse and seen the light of truth there. We were human. We were from Earth. We'd gotten here faster than the speed of light would allow. What was even more amazing to him was my regeneration. Our talk turned to that topic once he understood the basics of the Galactic Empire.
All right, he said, waving away my windy words. I understand what you're saying, although the details are vague. How are you able to come back to life? Not once, but over and over again.
I'm a copy of the original, I said. I didn't really come back to life. But if you trace every synaptic connection in a man's mind, and you have his DNA as a roadmap to rebuild his body, well, effectively, I live again. I have my old memories and a new version of my body. Actually, I'm better than before. I'm younger and stronger than when I died. Injuries aren't copied. The investigator put a bloody glove to his bearded chin. For some reason, this made me wince. Maybe it was because it was my own blood that now streaked his face.
So strange, he said, and so much information all at once.
Della spoke up then.
Then you believe him, investigator? I thought him mad at first, but he convinced me he was not a simple littermate like the others. I feel better to know I'm not a fool.
No, my young scout, you're no fool. You were wise to bring this man to me.
He waved a hand toward my previous self and chuckled.
More than once, in fact.
Let's talk about something else, then, I suggested. We plan to attack the littermates and slavers when they come for you again. When they try to dig into your, cavern, we'll hit them from behind. The investigator narrowed his eyes.
Why? That will only provoke them.
I think, sir, that they have provoked us. We're Legion Varus. We're one of Earth's space-going armies. What's wrong with protecting our fellow Earthmen?
He said thoughtfully. You described yourselves as mercenaries. Swords sold to the highest bidder. Who then paid your freight out to this distant star, soldier?
Finally, he touched upon the one topic I didn't want to talk about. After all, we'd come out here to solve a problem. That problem had been the colonists themselves at the time. As a teen, I'd become an almost professional liar. I could tell in an instant that my hesitation was becoming too long and he was growing suspicious. The investigator was many things, but he wasn't stupid. Sir, I said, pulling upon my bag of tricks, let me explain. The aliens in this sector, the cephalopods, they aren't part of the Galactic Empire. They're operating in space without a license, and they attacked a galactic ship in this system. That isn't acceptable to the Empire. Eventually, they'll come here and correct the situation. In the meantime, we're here. We're local, and we're combat ready. We didn't know exactly what we'd find when we got here, but now that we've arrived, we're ready to render assistance. For the first time, the investigator looked worried.
The Galactics will come here to correct the situation. Can you be more specific?
I squirmed. That's
the part that might go badly, I said. They aren't very understanding. They might blame your people, mine, the squids, anyone and everyone for what happened. We're going to try to sort that out in our favor, of course.
Of course, he echoed. By that, I take it you mean you're going to try to blame it all on the cephalopods.
I nodded. He smiled and then laughed aloud. It was a hearty laugh, and it made his body heave with the force of it.
What a grand joke, he said. The Galactics will come with so many ships that you can scarcely see the stars. That's what you said, isn't it? The cephalopods have only one that we've ever seen. I will weep with joy the day the Galactics arrive.
I tried to laugh with him, but found the best I could do was smile thinly. I had no idea who the Galactics would blame when they got here. They were good at punishment, sure, but justice wasn't always their strong suit. Chapter 24 After we broke up the meeting with the investigator, I found myself on the verge with Della.
"Hold here a moment, James," she said. "I want to talk to him privately."
She left me there. I looked after her, wondering what she wanted to talk about. But I soon became too interested in my environment to worry. The equipment, such well-kept, exquisite antiques. I'd seen computers like these in museums. They were entirely electronic, with nothing organic inside at all. What was even stranger was the way they warmed up your hand when you touched them. Computers in my day were usually as thin as a slip of paper and gave off no heat at all, like the tapper inside my arm. I could scarcely imagine what it would be like to lug around something that weighed a man down. Before I could do more than poke at the antiques, Della popped out of the door behind me. She smiled when I looked at her with questioning eyebrows.
"I'll take you back to your camp. The investigator would like to arrange a proper meeting with your leader. Perhaps greater cooperation would benefit both sides."
"That's good news," I said. I followed her down the stairs, across the smoky sward where most people slept huddled on the cool stone floors, and across a sandy region that eventually led to the winding tunnels. Once in the tunnels themselves, I tried to keep track of the route, but it was difficult. Convincing Della that I was only idly curious, I paused now and then to look through the conical tubes that showed me events on the valley floor below. The true purpose of my investigations was to track my position, of course. If I could use the tubes, I could find my way back here, should I ever have the need, just by taking occasional glances through these tiny scopes. I was surprised to see that the nearest tubes were close to the alien ship itself. We were right above it, almost within the shimmering dome of its force field. The thought was an alarming one. If the aliens knew exactly where to concentrate their fire, surely they could blast their way through and kill everyone huddling inside the guts of Hydra. Even the lab coat types, working with their obsolete instruments on the verge itself, would be in danger. On the way back, we seemed to be taking a circuitous route. I frowned, noticing that the tunnels were becoming moist and warm now, rather than cold and dank. "Della," I said, slowing down. "Where are we going? This tunnel, we've not been here before."
"Follow. This is a shorter path," she said without looking back.
I stood still and waited. She walked ahead a dozen steps. When she realized I wasn't following, she returned with an odd expression on her face.
"You're as suspicious as a tunnel stinger," she said.
"I have good reason to be," I said, eyeing her. "Why are you taking me someplace other than my tent?"
"It's the girl, isn't it?"
she asked.
"The one we left behind. She's your mate?"
No, not really. We're friends." She scoffed.
"Do you have many such friends?"
"As many as I can find," I admitted. She plucked at the sleeve of my smart cloth suit. The fibers reacted from her touch like slow elastic.
"Arrogant," she said. "Overconfident, but also very capable. You disgust me as much as you attract me. I can't understand my thoughts. Perhaps it is as they say, that a man from a distant valley is always more interesting.
Ah, did you say you find me attractive? Is that what this is all about?
I killed you once. You bested me in a fight the second time. I've never had such experiences with a male before.
I sized her up, and I can't say that I was entirely comfortable with what I saw. She was lovely and strong, and there was a definite look of odd excitement reflecting in her eyes. I wasn't quite sure if she wanted to screw me or cut my throat. To be honest, I suspected it was a little of both. Where are you taking me, Della?
There's a place ahead of us. There are pools in the caverns, warm pools that bubble under the earth. Would you like to see it?
I really need to get back to my unit. There'll be... Wham! She slapped me just like that. Her hand had flicked out and caught my jaw. Then I saw that her small fist was closed tight. It took me a second to realize that she hadn't slapped me. She'd full-on punched me in the mouth. What's more, she was pulling back her arm to drive her knuckles into my face again. I caught her wrist before she could punch me a second time and twisted her around, grabbing her other wrist. She struggled, but I was much stronger, heavier, and better trained. I held her from behind, one arm around her neck, both arms straining against mine with hysterical strength. Della raged and snarled, stomping on my feet. My boots took the abuse stoically. "How about we settle down a notch?" I suggested, putting my face to her ear. She banged her head in my mouth, and my lips stung. I don't know why, but this pissed me off. I've always had a slow fuse, but once I get going, things can go badly. She'd already dropped her crossbow, and I took this moment to toss aside her knife. Disarmed, I threw her on the ground in front of me. I stood with my fists balled up, but controlled myself from doing anything else. Lying at my feet, she stared up at me in the dim light. We were both breathing hard, and neither of us was saying anything. I waited for her to make the next move, to give me a sign. What she did surprised me. She scrambled up and ran down the passageway. I shook my head and almost laughed, but then I thought about all the twisting tunnels behind me. Sure, I might find my way back out of here, but it would take hours. I hadn't even seen any more of those little observation scopes for the last kilometer. Concerned that she was ditching me in the tunnels, I ran after her. I've got long legs and am in shape, but she gave me a good run for my money. Fortunately, she still had that glowing ring around her neck, and I followed it doggedly. Once in a while I thought I'd lost her, but then I would hear crumbling dirt or catch a flash of that wan green light, and I was off again after her. The tunnels became positively steamy after a while. Wherever we were headed, it was definitely somewhere new. When I was beginning to get tired, the tunnel widened and became a low, natural cavern. It was lighter here, but not much. White growths lined the walls and the open pools of bubbling water. A sulfurous smell met my nose. It wasn't entirely unpleasant, but I suddenly felt like I'd entered a geothermal steam bath in a volcanic region. Della had stopped running and stood by the pool's edge. She began stripping off her leather tunic. I watched, pleasantly surprised. She didn't even look at me. When she was naked, she stepped into the pool and sank down into it, hissing in pleasure. Confused, I walked to the edge and looked around, suspecting every shadow, stalactite, and boulder to be hiding a team of assassins. "You've got to be the weirdest chick I've ever had the misfortune to meet," I told her. She laughed.
"Twice you should have killed me," she said. "Twice you stopped yourself. There's only one reason a man would restrain himself. Stop lying to both of us and get into the baths with me."
I don't know why, but her logic seemed unassailable to me. I took off my clothes, climbed into that hot, hot water, and made love to a certifiable wild woman. She turned out to be a screamer, too. I wasn't in the least surprised about that part. When we were done, she escaped my arms and climbed onto dry land immediately. "Getting out so soon?" I asked. "What's the hurry? Veteran Harris probably has me down as a deserter by now. We might as well enjoy ourselves.
I must exit the water, she said, lying on her back, naked and steaming. It might interfere with conception.
I don't know what I'd expected her to say next, but that wasn't it. As hot as that water was, a cold chill ran right through me. I climbed out and stood over her. She lay there, looking up at me curiously. Conception? Are you talking about what I think you're talking about? She appeared quizzical.
Why else would I have mated with you? Why else did you chase me through the tunnels?
Where I come from, most ladies have birth control of some kind. All female legionnaires have it built in when they sign up.
Birth control? What's that?
Drugs, implants, you know, to stop conception. She lifted her pretty face and frowned up at me.
You speak of immorality. Every child is precious. None of my people would dare interfere with the process. I've been shunned for years because I've selfishly waited for so long.
My jaw opened and it didn't seem to want to close up again. You mean you're honestly trying to have my kid? That's crazy. You hardly know me.
The investigator thought it was an excellent idea, she said. I asked for his advice while you waited outside.
I nodded slowly. I hadn't known what they were talking about, but I never would have guessed this scheme. Della, I said, I'm not going to be able to be much of a dad if your plan works out.
I've thought about that, she said seriously. Every child needs a father to look up to. Fortunately, I have many suitors, who I've long spurned. I'll allow one of them to help me with the child when you've left us.
Whatever you do, don't make it that asshole named Stott who shot me in the back. She laughed.
Don't worry. I would never allow that man near me.
I didn't know what to say after that. A young man like me spends a lot of mental and physical energy on the process of getting laid. But we spend precious little time pondering the possible results. Sleeping with the sterile women in the unit had left me in a state of mind where I was particularly unprepared for this situation. Not knowing what else to do, I put my clothes on and waited for her to do the same. She took her time about it, as she wanted to give my seed the best possible odds of impregnating her. Was this a curse, a blessing, or just sheer madness? I had to admit I had no idea what to think. Before we'd gone 100 meters back up the tunnel, leaving the baths behind, Della halted and put a hand up to touch my mouth. I dragged out my sidearm and stared into the darkness ahead. I saw the sandy dirt shift and heard the tiny splash of pebbles in the puddle. What was it, a lizard? I wasn't sure, but I was willing to follow her lead. After all, she lived down here. I was just a visitor. She crept forward in a crouch, and I followed, senses training. When we came to a twist in the tunnel, one of many, we heard an unmistakable sound. It was a snuffling noise like a hunting dog might make, but this creature was larger, heavier. The sounds reminded me of a bear following a scent to a food source. I wrapped both hands around my pistol, and the snuffling stopped. Della had frozen in place, so I did the same. We were waiting, hoping the slaver would turn and go another way. I didn't even know how he'd managed to get down here. The tunnels seemed too narrow for one of their kind. But then I remembered just how lanky and thin they were. They'd been bred for work like this. What happened next took both of us by surprise. A distant hooting sound echoed through the tunnels. Whatever was around the corner from us stirred, sending sifting grit down onto the tunnel floor. Then we heard what could only be a stealthy retreat. Footsteps padded away. I heaved a gentle sigh and edged forward. Della was hung back, tense. "We're good, I think," I whispered to her. She shook her head slightly, so I waited longer. Finally, in the silence, I became restless. I walked around the corner with my pistol extended in front of me. If I so much as saw a... An object flew out of the dark and struck my hands. I thought for a moment a rock had fallen from the ceiling. My hands hurt, and a black, ape-like shape unfurled itself from the ceiling of the tunnel. In shock, I watched it reach for me. Della charged around the corner and clawed at the thing's eyes. My vision was filled with those red-rimmed eyes, ear flaps, and huge puffing nostrils. Saliva ran in strings from the slaver's mouth. I wondered if our scent made them hungry. Deciding she was an easier catch, the creature sprang upon Della, letting its weight fall from the roof of the tunnel and crush her down. We were both now unarmed. I had already wrestled with several of these creatures, and I knew how strong they were. We didn't have a chance with our weapons. I knew what I should do, of course. I should turn tail and run for it. But that just wasn't in me. Instead, I reached down to pick up a rock. Holding Della down on her back with one knee planted on her chest, the creature turned its attention to me when I bashed it on the head. It looked annoyed rather than dazed or hurt. An incredibly long arm snaked out to pull me closer. I let it happen. My hand was fumbling in my pocket, digging out the tiny vial of powder that looked like cinnamon. I popped open the vial, held my breath, and as the slaver snuffed me happily, I gave it a snootful. The reaction was quick, and would have been amusing if we hadn't been so close to death or capture. The slaver went into convulsions, coughing and flailing. Della screeched in pain as its knees shifted more weight upon her. Then the slaver finally sank down, weakening. I grabbed hold of him under an armpit and heaved, roaring with the effort. He must have weighed several hundred kilos, and Della was being crushed to death. The stink of the slaver's unwashed skin was strong. He was scarred with what looked like burns that had ridged his skin. Did they beat him, or had this one already been singed by our lasers? I didn't know, but I was certain there wasn't any deodorant being used on his home world. When at last I had the unconscious form stretched out and off Della's body, I found my pistol and helped her stand. She shook me off and pushed me away, coughing.
"I'm fine," she said.
"How'd they get in here?" I asked her. She looked at me with frightened eyes.
"They can't possibly. They can't know the path."
"Well, I think they do."
"Then all is lost. We must save ourselves."
"What are you talking about?"
"Hydra. They'll find it. They'll follow our scent, backtrack. For them, scent is like vision. We've left a glowing trail fresh on these rocks. Once they know the way, many people will be forced to fight them in our sanctuary."
"Surely your fighters can beat a few slavers."
"We can. But that won't be the end of it. They'll mark the spot, and the ship will begin boring in through the walls. That's what they've been waiting for, you see. They've been searching for our core living area. They want our young, our pregnant women. They prize them above all."
I was torn as to what to do. I could go back up the tunnels and fight the invaders. That was my first instinct. But I also knew I couldn't do it alone. If they blasted holes in these walls, the littermates would be marching in their tight squads. They were far more deadly than any skinny. "I'm going back to my unit," I said. "I have to tell them what's happened. I'll try to get help." She nodded, eyeing me seriously.
"I think you're telling the truth. I'll lead you to an exit. But I can't go with you. I must try to warn the others. I might be able to beat them to Hydra. We must hurry, McGill."
"Call me James," I said.
"That's your secret name?"
Yeah. Just for friends and mating partners." Della smiled at me and gave me a kiss. After that, she was all business. She led me to an exit, and I wriggled through. Deeper back in the tunnels, I could hear the sounds of conflict. The skinnies must have met up with some of her people. I reached down and grabbed her arm.
"Hold on," I said. "You should come with me. Your people must know about the invasion by now. You'll be safer in our camp."
She shook her head.
"My place is with them, as yours is with your unit."
I heaved a sigh, knowing she was right. I handed her my laser pistol. "Use this, then. Short bursts. Don't burn out the diode." She thanked me and vanished into the darkness. When I managed to get out onto the surface of the world again, I couldn't believe how cool, fresh, and open it seemed. The sky was bright pink overhead, and I enjoyed the dawn winds that lightly ruffled my hair. My eyes widened. Dawn? We were supposed to attack the ship at dawn. I set off toward the camp at a run. Chapter 25. They almost shot me as I approached the base. It was a close thing. I was out of uniform, unarmed, and too tall for their liking. "Halt!" boomed a voice. "Identify yourself!" They didn't even wait for me to comply. Skittering and flailing, I threw myself down as a bolt sizzled in the air over my head. "McGill! James!" I shouted. "Weaponeer 3rd Unit!" The firing stopped. I quickly worked my tapper, syncing it up with the local network again. I'd forgotten I'd turned it off in order to make sneaking away easier last night. "Advance! Hands on head!" I did so, and when they recognized me, they cursed my name. As I made my way past the pickets, a guard drove the butt of his rifle into my back. Under different circumstances, I would have grabbed that rifle and twisted it around, but I didn't have the heart. After all, the guards were right. I shouldn't have been running around outside the camp all night long. I didn't make it 10 feet farther before I was arrested and hustled back to 3rd Unit. Graves ran his eyes over me, shaking his head, and Leeson snarled. But veteran Harris, he went ape.
"What in the hell do you think you're doing, McGill?" he roared. "Are you aware that we're gearing up for an attack not 20 minutes from now?"
"Yes, Vet. Sorry, Vet." I was on my knees. My hands were still on my head as I hadn't been given leave to lower them. I stared ahead, hoping that this would be over soon, one way or the other.
"I should execute you on the spot. You know that, don't you? I'd be perfectly within my rights, AWOL on the battlefield, no weapon in hand. Not only that, you look like shit."
"Sorry, Vet," I repeated. "I was..."
"No," he roared. Spittle landed in my hair. "No, I don't want to hear it. If I didn't need you on the line this minute, I'd put you out of my misery right here, right now. And no one, frigging no one, would give me any crap for doing it."
"Are we done here, Vet? I have to get my kit on."
"You should be in the brig. Now get your ass to your tent. Don't be stopping to shower and eat. You gave that up for whatever little romp you had in the bush."
I smiled a little. I couldn't help it. Harris must have seen my smirk because he kicked me in the side. The armored boot hurt more than usual, even though I'd been half expecting it. I got up and staggered away, feeling my ribs. None of them seemed broken.
"This isn't over, McGill,"
Harris called after me. Instead of responding, I scrambled to my tent, pulled on my gear, shoved a protein bar into my face, and began to chew. I was dead tired, but battles rarely waited for a man to get his beauty sleep. Being a heavy trooper isn't always better than being in a light unit. One problem is the length of time it takes to put your gear together. I shoved my feet into the bulky leggings, cursing and fumbling. The chest piece I managed to pull over my head, but the two halves didn't seem to want to knit up. Cursing and struggling, I tugged and slapped at the locks and smart gels that were supposed to find one another and cinch up.
"Here,"
said Kiwi. She'd followed me into my tent.
"You've got something stuck in the hinge."
I cranked my neck and looked into her face. Her eyes didn't meet mine.
"Are you okay?" I asked.
"I left when you were sleeping.
I figured out where you went, James. Save it. We all looked at the vids."
She still wasn't looking at me. I felt a burning sensation on my face. I was surprised to find myself feeling a little embarrassed.
"So you guys saw her, is that right?"
"Of course we did. The buzzers picked her up, followed her as she went sneaking around the camp. Didn't you even hear them?"
I did recall the sounds of a buzzer or two passing by as we were sneaking into the tunnels.
"I thought they'd missed me."
"They don't miss anything. The techs don't miss anything. We aren't an outfit of complete morons, you know."
She was cinching up my armor now, tapping at the smart gels until they activated. I felt a cool touch at each side of my abdomen as they began easing the armor closed. Like a turtle shell with two halves, the breastplate closed over me and clicked into its locked position.
"Thanks for the help, Kiwi,"
I said, feeling bad as I realized she must have known I'd left her lying in the tent and gone off for the night with another woman. Sorry about leaving you. She finally looked me in the eye. I could tell she was hurt.
What I said before? I was wrong,
she said, suddenly becoming angry.
There is a moron in this outfit. It's me.
Ah, now don't go there, Kiwi.
First you kill me. I understood that. I'm glad I wasn't dragged into that alien ship. But like a fool, I felt grateful. What I forgot was that you don't care. It's all just fun for you. Kiwi is a fun butt, just like back home. But I'm not plastic, you know.
I groaned inwardly. Kiwi was an odd sort. She was promiscuous, but could get hurt and upset and jealous about relationships anyway. This was one of those special occasions. It was easy to see that I hadn't treated her well. I'd run off without a care and pretty much forgotten about her. I'm sorry. I was trying to make contact with the colonists, and I did.
Yeah, I bet.
I'm not talking about that, I said. I meant I talked to their leader in the tunnels. They might help us directly against the aliens now. The slavers are infiltrating their base.
That's great, she said. You care more about the colonists than you do about me. For all you knew, that bitch had killed me with poison.
No, you were breathing. I checked before I left. Kiwi's eyes were a little red. She glared at me for a second.
Why'd you follow her? Just for more tail? Just for seconds? I think that's bullshit.
No, I said with conviction. I negotiated the ceasefire with the colonists, remember? I wanted to keep that going. That was all I was thinking about when she came into the camp.
But you did end up screwing her, right?
I put my helmet on and didn't say anything. It turned out to be the right move because she swung a steel gauntleted fist at my head. I'm not sure if she would have done it if I hadn't put my helmet on, but she might have, and I might not have been in any condition to move out with the unit if she had.
Hey, don't scratch my gear,
I protested lightly. She growled and exited the tent, throwing it aside so hard that the flap ripped. Smart cloth tabs sought one another in vain, looking like two blind vines trying to touch. They kept squirming, but the tear was too wide, and they would never patch up. I stared at them, then after Kiwi. I felt bad. Really, I did. The night had been a strange one, even by my standards. Heaving a sigh, I gathered up my plasma tube and hustled to Leeson's platoon rally point. Veteran Harris was already there, but he wasn't even looking at me. On the ready line! On the ready line! He shouted. Let's move, people! I want you to show me how much you love Legion Varus today! I moved up and joined the crowd on the line. There was a glowing nano-active paint line all along the ridge where we were, just out of sight of the enemy ship. Up and down the long row I could see troops organizing and standing on their lines. This is going to be a straight-out charge, Harris told us. Three waves, and lucky us, we're in the first. A groan went up from the assembled troops. Why don't they just recycle us all right now? Carlos complained. Harris swaggered over to him with a predatory grin. In your case, I'm willing to make an off-script exception, Ortiz. Harris had his sidearm out, and he directed it into Carlos's face. Carlos turned his attention to the line, and Harris stalked away. Leeson walked the line with Harris. Both of them were checking kits and hitting people in the head if they didn't like what they saw. Keep focus, people, Leeson said as he walked the line. We'll get this signal soon enough. We've got nearly 2 kilometers to run, so I want you to use every gram of your suit's artificial muscle in this effort. You're to make a full burn charge all the way to the ship's force field if we can get that far without enemy contact. What if those armed giants are waiting out there for us? Carlos asked. Then we kill them. We're expecting to run into enemy troops. They're marching out of the ship and toward the tunnels they've been blasting open all day. We're going to roll in behind them as they try to get underground. We're hoping to catch them by surprise and pin them down. The second wave is going to rush the ship, get inside, and take it. I was impressed. It was a bold plan. "What about the third group, sir?" I asked. Leeson fixed me with a stern gaze. "They'll watch our progress. They're operating as reserves. They'll back up whichever group they figure needs help." I nodded. Legion Varus was made up of 10 cohorts, each about 1,000 strong. There was only one cohort in this valley, and we were getting all the action. We had 9 units in our cohort that were really combat troops. The last unit was made up of auxiliaries, mostly bio people and techs. Looking up and down the line on the ridge, I saw 3 full units in armor. 3 waves of 300 men each. It was going to be quite a show of force. "They'll never know what hit them, sir," I said. Leeson didn't smile, but he nodded. "Okay, the Primus has just given me the final warning. I'm signaling green. If you've got a god or a mama, send some happy thoughts into space for me and the rest of us. We're doing this in 3, 2... I never heard him say 1. Instead, a roar swept the line and everyone charged. I joined them with my bulky plasma unit banging on my shoulder. When set for a dead run, a heavy in a suit can make an amazing spectacle of himself. We bounded across the land, smashing through the wilted vegetation and splattering mud along the lake shore. We tried to spread out and ended up forming a ragged line that wouldn't be easy to take out all at once. My heart pounded, and my helmet rang with battle cries from the 100 throats of my unit. There's something about a long charge across open land that isn't quite like anything else a man can experience in combat. I can't recommend it, but it is unforgettable. My suit was in command now. My legs were moving, but almost without meaning to. It was like running down a steep hill. It was all I could do to keep from falling on my face. As my bounding legs propelled me almost painfully fast, I had a moment to think about charging lines of troops in years past. During World War I and prior to that, this sort of thing was a standard of warfare. Heavy armor and faster infantry had brought it back into style. The ship loomed ahead like a beached black whale. The gun on top of it took notice of our approach. It rose, swiveled, with an almost intelligent motion, and took aim at our right flank, the unit plunging along closest to the lake shore. My unit was on the left, and I was relieved not to be the first group that the massive cannon turned its wrath upon. The tip brightened, and the shaft rippled with released gases. I could hear and see first unit trying to scatter. Some fell back while others plunged forward, running faster. I'm not sure how much of a difference it made in the end. The ship's big gun fired, and a dozen or so heavy troops were caught in that invisible beam of destruction. When you're hit by a high-powered beam, the effect isn't just a matter of heat. The blow is a physical one, spinning around the victims and blasting them flat. In a fraction of a second, 1,000 pulses of energy are released and delivered to the target. The effect was explosive, as if the victims were suddenly all individually hit in the chest plate by their own personal grenades. The lake hissed and exploded into steam, which billowed up in a white cloud. The lake shore, under the stricken soldiers, was slicked into a crusty mass, having been instantly slagged into smoking glass. In response to the blast from the big gun, our own people back on the ridge fired at the gun itself. In order to release that big bolt of power, the shield had to come down for a split second. In that moment, everyone behind us tried to knock out the cannon. From what I could see, they had little effect. At this range, even the heavier weapons didn't have enough punch to damage the big cannon. They did strike it, evidenced by little pockmarks rippling the sleek black canopy and the sub-shields that protected it. But they didn't score the kind of hard, direct hit that would take it out. The dome-like shield shimmered closed again. The gun began to travel, seeking a new target. I turned away from the scene out on the beach. I had my own problems, the biggest of which was keeping up with my unit. That wasn't easy, as I was carrying more weight than anyone else. A weaponeer's bane was always his massive tube and the hump-like power source on his back. I felt like I was slugging a set of trucker's tools into battle. The big cannon charged up again and struck at our center next, second unit. They took it hard. I don't think their commander had expected to get nailed. It didn't make much sense to strike one unit, then another, on the opposite flank, but then I wasn't an expert in squid psychology. The beam took out nearly 20 men. 20. I couldn't believe it. At this rate, we'd be half dead before we even reached the dome. But as it turned out, I didn't have to worry about that. The enemy troops that had been sent to root out colonists had been recalled, and they now engaged us from the broken rocks along the bottom of the cliffs to our left. They fired guns that sent heavy pellets into our midst. To me, they looked like huge high-tech muskets.
"That's it, people," Graves shouted over the unit-wide channel. "Split up by squads and charge left. Get into cover and engage those troops. We can't let them get back to the ship."
Eagerly, we obeyed. At the very least, it would take us out of the hellish face of the cannon. I was almost fantasizing about a good old-fashioned stand-up fight with the Littermates by now. Chapter 26. All three of the charging units veered left to intercept the enemy that was coming out of the rocks and heading back toward their ship. We'd managed to get in between them and their goal. I understood the plan, but this wasn't the spot any trooper wanted to find himself in. As we scrambled toward the rocks, the huge ship with its deadly cannon still fired slow, ponderous bursts into our formation. I don't know how many died. I'd lost count and interest. All I cared about was reaching the line of boulders that formed a wall like worn teeth in a skull in front of us. Behind every boulder was an enemy soldier whose job seemed to be to make our lives as difficult as possible. Their muskets cracked and boomed. They had a slow rate of fire, but they hit hard. Even in full armor, men were spun around and knocked flat. Usually they got back up and limped forward, rejoining the charge. But sometimes they'd taken the round right in the visor, or at some weak juncture in the armor, such as where the shoulder cusp met the breastplate. When that happened, they were taken out. Despite everything, we charged on. We didn't have much choice. When we finally got in close to the enemy, clustered among the boulders, the big cannon stopped burning us down. It swung away, no doubt to punish the next wave of three units which had been sent forward in an avalanche of flashing steel toward the ship. I didn't wish the next three units any harm, but by damn, I figured it was their turn to take a few hits for the team. When we reached the boulders, the enemy stepped forward in almost stately calm. These guys were funny in the head, if you asked me. I'd seen them fight before, and it was the same this time. They operated like they were on parade, until they took losses. Then they went absolutely ape. It wasn't normal. As we'd been trained, we spread out so we could fight without taking a neighbor's head off. This stretched our thinned lines. I tried not to think about how many of us had fallen on the charge to get here. It had to be close to half. This was one of the moments where an Earth Legion really shined. When we took hard hits, we could still keep going. In history, there weren't too many armies that could withstand the kind of losses we did without breaking. Morale figured differently in my era. We knew that we'd come back to life if the worst happened. We didn't want to die, far from it, but we were more likely to keep on fighting if there was any reasonable hope of victory. Like any force, we could be broken if it was utterly hopeless. If the sane person knew it was time to run, well, we'd run, just like the next guy. Smashing into the enemy line, then, was both a relief and a new terror. I knew the big cannon couldn't fire into our midst without killing their own troops. I also knew, however, that these littermate guys were slightly insane. Breathing hard, I ran into a boulder at a trot, letting it slam into my armor and halt me. Then I geared down the exoskeleton, broadening the power distribution. During the charge, everything had gone to the legs, and already my power reserves were down 19%. I gritted my teeth as the last few muskets boomed, and we finally plunged into the rocks. I extended my force blades and set them for standard close-quarters fighting. Both my blades rippled with energy, each about a meter in length.
"Turn off those blades, McGill!"
screamed Leeson, slamming into the rocks beside me. I turned my armored bulk to look at him.
"They're hiding in these rocks like ticks, sir," I said. "I don't want to go farther without my blades out."
Leeson shook his head and pointed upslope.
See that guy? The one poking his nose out with a big gun in his hands? Take his head off with that tube of yours. With any luck, they'll come to us. We won't have to dig them out.
I caught on to the tactic he was suggesting, and I thought it was a good one. I retracted my force blades, unlimbered my belcher tube, and laid it over the top of a handy scorched rock. A moment later, I took down the monster that seemed to be aiming right back at me.
"Got him!"
I shouted as he toppled back. Leeson and I grinned at each other, and I swiveled my tube to the right, planning to play sniper. Their muskets weren't as powerful as our weapons, and they didn't have armor that was as effective. This might not be the hell fight I'd been expecting. My fantasies soon vaporized. Before I could even take a second shot, the littermates rose up in fury. I saw their eyes. They were impossibly wide. I found large men with the whites of their eyes bulging out in red-ringed circles, intimidating.
Slam! Leeson hit the back of my helmet. Aim and fire! Piss off another group!
Breathing hard and uncertain now, I did as he ordered. I have to confess I didn't aim particularly well the second time around. I was a bit nervous. Instead of a clean shot, I'd have to say I got lucky. A second enemy head was left pulped and smoking. The first group had abandoned their sniper positions. They were now up and charging across the tops of the boulders, taking huge leaps toward me. I knew in my heart that my second shot had tipped them off. I'd alerted them with the first round, then firmly placed myself on their radar with the second. The second group went mad a moment later, and soon it seemed like they were all charging down over the rocks. I can't tell you what it's like to have a pack of thundering genetic monstrosities bounding like mountain goats over boulders toward you, especially when you know they're out to get you and no one else. Laser rifles from my comrades flashed and burned them as they came. Headshots worked best, and our troopers took advantage of this, taking down half before they reached our line. When the berserkers got in close, our troops, who'd infiltrated the rocks a dozen meters or more, fired and slashed upward, cutting them from below. Maddened warriors lost legs and were spun around with burning gouges in their chests and faces. But most of them came on. They were all wounded, I think, by the time they got to me. Leeson was screaming something, but I didn't honestly have any clue what he was saying. I was in full automatic panic mode, knowing I was in an all-out fight to the finish. I'd already counted myself dead, but I meant to deliver some more pain before they got their revenge. Dialing the big cannon into a broad cone, I burned the first two that got close. A few curses and screeches came up from my own people who'd caught a whiff of my final blast on the back of their armor. I was sorry about that, but any weapon here will tell you, a plasma cannon is far from a surgical instrument of death. It's more like a blowtorch. I dropped my cannon. I didn't think Leeson liked that, and he got into my face. But I knew the cycle time on my own weapon, and at the rate these gentlemen were approaching my position, I didn't have time for another shot. Perhaps I shouldn't have shoved Leeson to one side, but I did it anyway. I'm a firm believer in the concept of allowing a man to choose his own death when it's a foregone conclusion. Not everyone in Varus agrees with me, but frankly, they can all screw themselves. Squeezing my gauntlets, my twin blades extended with a sizzling sound. I lifted them both and put up my guard. Not a second later, the first of the psychotics reached me. His eyes were still white circles, bulging. I doubted they'd closed or blinked since he'd first spotted me, and I knew somehow that even if I killed him, those eyes would track me until the last drop of blood ran out of his burning brain. In his hand, lifted high over his head, was a razor-sharp cutlass of sorts. The sword looked as long as a fence post, and the edge shone with the unnatural precision of an enhanced blade. It made a glittering arc as it chopped down toward me. I assumed a pose designed to meet a charge from high ground. My left arm was up, guarding my helm, and my right was low, ready for a thrust at the gut. It was a textbook stance, one that had been drilled into me over the preceding months. I was almost surprised that it worked as well as it did. The berserker's sword came apart when it touched my force blade, sending most of its length skittering harmlessly over my head. Then I thrust, and the monster lost a leg. Sidestepping, I let him crash down where he'd been standing. Such weight! It was like having a Clydesdale thrown at you. An unarmored man might have been killed just by having one of these guys fall on him. I drew a long line down his gut with one blade as he fell, and was stunned that he still flopped.